You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Hello, everybody. What an exciting day. I am here with Peggy Caruso. She is the owner of Life Coaching and Beyond LLC. She is a certified executive and personal development coach, advanced relaxation therapist, NLP, which if you don't know is neuro-linguistic programming, master practitioner, author, and eight-time entrepreneur with 24 years experience. Her Revolutionize series has been approved as a registered trademark, and inclusive of that is her just released book, Revolutionize Your Corporate World, and her previous books, Revolutionize Your Life and Revolutionize Your Child's Life. Maybe that's what we should be talking about today for my kids. Throughout her professional career, she has helped not only countless professionals, but numerous children rid themselves of depression, ADD, and ADHD medication. And part of the reason, Launch Street, that I wanted to talk to her today is she has a lot of experience and insight into how to get over those hurdles and barriers and the things that are keeping us from getting the outcomes we want, which I think as innovators is a big part of the things that we face. So Peggy,
I want to understand what it means to be a leader, because you know, you were saying to me before the interview that a lot of people get it wrong, which I totally agree with. And part of the reason I'm asking is with our focus on innovation, a lot of leaders give their teams this, you know, mandate to be innovative so they can gain the edge or compete in the marketplace. But then often they don't give them the tools or even the definition of what that really means. And it leads to this big disconnect. So will you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I gave the example of when I wrote Revolutionize Your Child's Life, it goes back to the children. Start there. It's in comparison to the corporate world. I teach children success principles, teach them how to become a kidpreneur. And a lot of the parents will say, well, what if my kid doesn't want to own their own business? The point is, it doesn't matter. You're still teaching them success principles. It's the same thing in the corporate world today of unlocking that creativity and success is leading by example is leadership. It doesn't mean that you have to be the head of the company. It's the foundation of success. I think in leaders, we need to be compassionate and well-rounded, patient, and I think it's a combination of entrepreneurial skills with emotion.
Interesting. And what, if you were kind of to define what those entrepreneurial skills are, what would those be?
Part of it is who you are and then mixing it with the emotion, with the entrepreneurial skills. In other words, like I said, the leadership, creating a relaxing environment, replacing negatives with positives, showing them that you can be a good follower as well.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned kids. So I have two boys, they're 8 and 12, and they have chores they have to do that they get allowance for. But more than that, we're trying to teach them these entrepreneurial skills so they have to find things that need to be done around the house and then come to me and say, I will do this for you for this price. And then we negotiate it. I'm trying to teach them to find those opportunities out there in the world, not just be told what to do all the time. And it's been a really interesting evolution with them. And I try to actually work, funny enough, try to work that in a little bit with the companies we work with as well, is how do you train your people to find opportunities or find those challenges?
I love that because I teach families to do exactly that. I wish there were a lot more parents like you that did that. Because it does. It teaches them success principles from a very young age.
Yeah, it's cool to see, and they're very good now at identifying where things can be done better. Where the, you know, I don't know that they'd say I'm the best parent. I'm sure if you interviewed my kids, they'd be like, Anyways, so what does it mean burning the boats? You talk about that.
Think about the story. You know, about the ancient Greek warriors. I'm sure you're familiar with it. They were feared and respected by their enemies. It's that unsurpassed bravery and commitment to victory. You know, when they burned the boats, they had nothing to retreat to, no turning back. You have to win or perish. It's that huge leap of faith. You know, it has a big psychological impact on you. I'm that person. Like, if someone tells me, you know, you can't do that, or it's going to be too much of a challenge, that's my motivator. I will always win. I will always be successful because I have that drive. So I try to get people to identify with that. And so many people in the corporate world and the personal world are so negative. you know, everybody says there's 50% chance of rain, and I'm the only one that says there's 50% chance of rain.
So funny. I never really thought about it that way. When they say that, you could really just flip it.
Yeah. And I think that's important in the workplace. You know, when you were talking about the entrepreneurial, when we were talking about the different things of the saboteurs and the leadership, you know, all of that goes hand in hand. I have a, for motivation, I have a 6-point program that I do for leadership. You know, it's relaxation and making positive changes within many areas of your life, educating yourself, developing listening skills, effective communication and awareness. Those are keys in the entrepreneurial world.
What are the benefits? Let's talk a little bit about those. So meditation, relaxation techniques. I think you also mentioned to me offline the zero gravity sensory deprivation, which I'm fascinated by. So what are the benefits of all that, and how do they assist in business? Because I think personally we get why they're beneficial, but how does that translate?
Well, meditation is huge. I meditate every day of my life. There's no right or wrong way. It's getting calmness of your mind. It's getting you to start your day off in a positive energy flow, because as a science, we are energy. So you want to start your day off very calm. So meditation can be many different things. Some people like it with guided meditation or music. Some people just like the quiet, the calm. But I put in, I don't know if you're familiar with it since you mentioned it, it's a zero gravity sensory deprivation float tank. Are you familiar with them?
So I'm familiar, and funny that you ask, because after you and I were going back and forth, I went online and looked, and I am on the verge of scheduling my first appointment because it looks fascinating.
It's amazing. You're probably more familiar with what they call the pods, but I'm claustrophobic and I know many people who are. So I found there was only one place I could find of a guy who builds them, and their actual room, it's a 6x8 tank. So you can stand up in it. A couple people could fit in it. And you get in there and the music and the lights fade and you're in total darkness. The water is skin temperature, so it's not hot or cold. And it's like a foot of water, and there's 1,200 pounds of Epsom salt, which is magnesium sulfate.
Wow.
There's so many benefits to it. It is just an amazing experience.
So when you're in it, I just have to ask, are you able to shut out your mind? Because I know even when I meditate, my biggest challenge, and maybe you have some tips here for us, because I 100% agree with you. Meditation, when I do it in the morning, I have a more centered, more focused, more productive, more creative day. So, but I have a really hard time shutting down all that chatter and things that I swear, Peggy, things come up in my brain that I haven't thought about for months. I'm like, where did you even come from?
That's very normal. Meditation is a very difficult thing to learn, especially from corporate people and the men that I've taught it to. Sometimes it takes them like 4 months to get it. But that's why when you first start meditating, that guided meditation is good, because it's kind of like a strengthening, like physical exercise would be. It's a mental strengthening. But when you're in the float tank, once you learn how to meditate, it is the most amazing experience, because it's sensory deprivation. Like you go in naked, you don't have anything on, and you are just completely, you can't feel anything because of water skin temperature. So you feel like you're floating in space.
Wow.
It's such a calming, wonderful feeling, and it has many, many therapeutic benefits as well.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to try it. So if I do it, let's say I'm a leader, let's kind of bring it back to your latest book, Into the Corporate World. If I'm a leader, I do the zero gravity sensory deprivation, I get out, what happens next to me? What are my benefits from having done that?
Oh, wait till you float. You make sure you tell me how it went.
Oh, I will. I totally will.
But normally people tell me, and I know this from myself for floating all the time, you have an increased amount of energy. In my research, they say that 1 hour in the tank is like equivalent to 2 hours of sleep. It's like the next day, you just feel empowered. You feel amazing. Like I have a lot of doctors that use it, and you know, they get very tired because they have such long days and whatnot, but they love it.
All right. So my challenge to all of us in Launch Street is to go out and try it. And then when we, you know, put this podcast out, we'll have heard it, but put in the comment section how it went, because I'm going to definitely try it and get back to everybody. I've been eyeing it for a long time now. You know, you talk about the power of having or being a decisive leader. What is that, and why is that important?
Well, it goes along with all the things that we talked about, leadership. But being a decisive leader, being able to make quick decisions, following your intuition, it's like I said, one of the greatest skills a leader can have is the ability to make decisions. And people sometimes ponder too much. They wait too long. You know, that's what I teach a lot to corporate people about following your intuition, developing your intuition if you don't. You know, steps toward a decision-making process are identifying the problem and analyzing and gathering information. You know, if you evaluate it by the combination of your education, your intuition, your skills. So,
how do you develop your intuition? I think, you know, it feels like, and I'm not saying this is true, but I think this is kind of the myth maybe out there, that some people are really good at that. They're just very good at gut reaction. And other people get stuck in analysis paralysis. So if I'm on that side, which I think, unfortunately, a lot of people in the corporate world, because you get trained to have to overanalyze everything and then you get stuck there. How do you get out of that and back to the place where tuition can help inform you and guide you? Because isn't it really just a different way of making decisions?
Well, I believe your intuition is like your sixth sense. It's your fight or flight. My intuition has never been wrong. Even in the mistakes I made, sometimes I didn't listen to my intuition and then it came out that it was a mistake. But that's not necessarily a bad thing either, because I teach in the corporate world that I think failure is good. It's stones to success. So intuition is kind of like, I don't know if you've ever heard the expression, like the terror barrier, when you're afraid to bust through to go to the next level, especially corporate people, because like you said, they want to analyze it. It's trusting that gut instinct that this is when you need to make this decision to go.
I want to back up into something you said very quickly, because I wholeheartedly agree with you and want to get your perspective, I think, and want to get your perspective on it. You know, you said failure is actually good. Delve into that a little bit, because it's, you know, failure is one of those things where, and the word in itself, you know, we all say we want to be okay with failure, but what I experience with my clients is, you know, failure is one of those things where when it happens, we say we want to learn from it, we say it's okay, but that's not really how it often plays out. But it is good.
Well, I believe failure is just modifications you need to make to your plan. I always teach parents the same thing, is to let your kids fail here and there. I'm not saying let them fail a grade, but it's no different in the workplace. That's how you learn and that's how you grow. Failure is only failure when you don't get back up. I think it's stepping stones to success. I think I look back, I've had many what some people might classify as failures. They just helped me become successful and who I am today. So I just learn from them. What did I learn from it and walk away from it? It's amazing when I have clients that come in, one of the questions I ask are, what are the things you consider a failure in life? And they're really not failures. I haven't seen anyone yet who's had a complete failure. That's only when you don't get back up and keep going.
So I like what you're saying. You know, I'm a big believer that it's not about failure or success. It's really about outcomes. And either that outcome went the way you hoped, or maybe even better, or it didn't. And if it didn't, you've got to tweak and adjust until you get it right. And I agree, failure is really more giving up than it is anything else. And, you know, I think we have to be okay with where we started with something and where we ended are probably not going to be anywhere close to the same, because we're going to learn and grow as it happens. If you're working with a leader or with a team, how do you get them to shift their thinking, and not just their thinking, but also their habits around failure, so that they can actually embody what you're saying?
Well, because I think they have to analyze it first. They have to analyze the whole situation as to what went wrong, why it went wrong. And then, you know, my favorite saying is there's a solution to every problem. And so I love corporate things like retreats where they think that they have these huge problems, and you teach them how to work together as a team and how to pull the resources together. You know, I teach a lot of masterminding, and I know you're probably very familiar with that. I've had mastermind teams throughout the world my entire life, and it's been super beneficial on a personal and a professional level.
I love masterminds. Are one of my favorite things. For those who are new to the concept or maybe have touched upon with mentorship but not masterminds, will you talk about what it is?
Sure. It's a group of people that come together. I'll give you an example of my mastermind group. I had two guys from Canada, two guys from India, my girlfriend from Sweden, and myself. And you meet once a week, of course, because we're from different countries, we would Skype. And you meet once a week just for an hour. And everybody goes around the table and you put the problem out there, and then everyone works together and pulls their resources to help you solve it or overcome the obstacles or reach your desired outcome. It's really amazing because in the first minute you just say, you know, a positive that happened to you. It's kind of like a motivator. And then as you go, everybody works together and helps you, like I said, with resources and helps you solve the problem. It's magnificent.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, my mastermind groups have shortcutted things that I didn't even know I was dealing with and helped me get over those hurdles. It really is incredible. And sometimes just being able to say your challenges or what you're dealing with out loud helps give you clarity.
Absolutely.
As well. I mean, I agree with you. There's so many benefits. So if I'm a leader in a company, what type of mastermind should I pull together? Is it other leaders in the company? Is it people from other companies? How do you pull that together? I mean, for entrepreneurs, I think it's very easy, right? You have all these different people who own businesses, so you come together. How does it work in corporate?
I think it's very beneficial to go outside of the company for fresh eyes, fresh perspective. Believe it or not, I even teach mastermind kids. So you always put like different age groups. You want people who have the same types of goals that you have. In other words, like I'm a go-getter. I'm a very driven person. So I would want people on my team that have that same drive, that same passion. But you don't necessarily want the same people in the same industry. I wouldn't want to be on a mastermind team with other executive coaches. I think right. It's more beneficial to have the diversity.
Right. Yeah, that diversity in thinking is big. It really does help give you a 360-degree view of your work that you wouldn't have had if everybody comes from the same perspective.
Right. And so when we talk about corporate and masterminding, I also do retreats. So I teach people that that come with the board of directors. You know, how do you choose your board? It's kind of the same thing. You want diversity on that board.
Right. So if you're out there listening, I would encourage you to think about how to create a mastermind for yourself, because I think what Peggy's saying here, while it sounds very basic, you get a group of people together and you discuss what's working and what's not working. The benefits of it are tremendous, and it's really a powerful way to help you shortcut some of the challenges and to get better views on your work. You know, I want to bring it, I'm a little bit all over the place because you keep saying things that I kind of want to dig into and then I have to go back to the other things I was asking. I want to dig a little bit into, you know, decisive leaders and how that impacts your ability to be innovative, to launch those ideas, to kind of get that buy-in in your company. Because when I read your work on that, it kind of made me realize, wow, one of the things that gets ideas moving forward is decisiveness, because otherwise they just get stuck in the mud. So from your view and being an expert in this decisive leader concept, how does that help you be innovative and get buy-in for those ideas?
Well, it helps you, again, you know, I talk about the steps toward that decision-making process. You know, it helps you to be able to identify what your problems are, you know, how you can come together as a leader to analyze and gather the information that you need. What are the pros and the cons and creating a strategic plan of action? You can't create a strategic plan of action if you're not decisive.
So what happens when you're indecisive? Because I always feel like your lack of ability to make a decision means that somebody else is probably making it for you.
Right. That goes with the common decision-making mistakes. People who are overwhelmed, they're not decisive. A lot of people rely on too much on, say, expert information. They overestimate the value of things, their perception, their lack of intuition. Those are some of the common decision-making mistakes.
What is your response to people, since you mentioned intuition again, who say, well, what's your rationale behind that? What's your data? I mean, just because your gut's telling you. Because I think that's the pushback we sometimes get, is being more intuitive people.
Right. I questioned that a lot in the very beginning of how do you know when to trust it? You know, and I truly, my thing comes from in education. I have educated myself on intuition, what it is, and I do believe it is our sixth sense and that gut talking to you. But you have to test it. You have to practice with it. And I always tell people, practice on the smaller things that aren't going to be detrimental. And you learn very quickly what your gut is telling you, what your intuition is saying.
You do, don't you? And, you know, it's to me, intuition is very important to innovation because, you know, oftentimes it's a more circuitous way of putting the data together. You know, instead of being A to B to C to D and kind of thinking logically, it's A to L to X over to Y back to N, you know, and it kind of comes together in a more circuitous way, which can actually lead to more innovative ideas if we're listening to our guts.
Right. And I think with intuition, you also need to apply like your skill sets too, to, you know what I mean? Like you have to kind of match up the combination of, like I said, the education, the skills, the experience, all of that is to me a part of intuition.
Yeah, it totally is. So I just want to pause for a second and say to those out there in Launch Street listening, intuition is important and valid. And if you are struggling with it, like Peggy said, I love that idea you had of just, you know, practice on the small things. Like, let's start with what should I have for dinner? Make a quick decision and move on to then what should I launch to market instead of starting there. I want to ask you about neuro-linguistic programming. I'm fascinated by it. I've just started reading books about it. Just to start for our listeners, will you define what it is?
It's a very difficult thing to explain to people who are not familiar with it. So start with the three most influential components that are involved in the human experience: neurology, language, and programming. And that's where it comes from, neuro-linguistic programming. The neurological system, of course, regulates how our bodies function. The language determines how we interface and communicate with other people, and the programming determines the kinds of models that we can create. So it's metaphorical. It deals with things like modalities and whatnot. But the experiences in neuro-linguistics programming is it's identifying behavioral patterns that need to be changed and then changing them. And again, a lot of that is metaphorical combined with visualization. And those are kind of some of the techniques that you use on them. It's very effective for children, very effective.
How does NLP help you accomplish your goals?
Again, I go back to, I'm huge on visualization, especially in corporate. Like when I wrote a book, the very first time I wrote it, I thought, I'm just not going to tell anyone I'm writing. I'm just going to write it. I wrote it in 2 weeks. But I had that visualization the whole time I used it for a motivator. Like people would say to me, how did you write a book in 2 weeks? But I would use those NLP techniques for like picturing someone who I love that would be very proud of me. So you kind of picture yourself in them and them coming back the way you anticipate that you would want them to come back. It's a motivator. So it was like an inspiration to keep writing.
And do you think our programming is it so hardwired that sometimes we don't even know maybe the sabotaging or the habits that we're doing to ourselves that are holding us back versus, you know, I mean, it's, to me, in some ways, it's very, I don't want to say easy, but it is apparent to focus on the positive ones, the things that I know I should be doing to drive myself forward. Sometimes with the negative ones, I don't even know I'm doing it.
Right. And that's why you have to identify them. And part of the way that we identify them within NLP is utilizing your senses, pulling your senses into it. You'd be amazed when I did my, when I got my certification, how you do exercises that make you aware of sights, sounds, smells. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't understand how that would be beneficial in the corporate world, but it's super beneficial if you, in the corporate world, I'm sure you're familiar with how to identify someone's representational system. So think about that in a corporate setting. How do you get along with a visual if you're a kinesthetic person? So, I teach a lot of that to corporate people when they can't get along with different people and different personalities within their organization, is to teach them what representational system does that person have. And that's how you learn how to get along with that personality.
Oh, I could just keep digging and digging on this, but we're close to out of time. So Peggy, where can people connect with you and get your books?
My website, www.lifecoachingandbeyond.com. And it's also available on all the online bookstores.
Awesome. What's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you? You know, personal hobby, experience, passion.
Well, my biggest passion is I'm writing these books and having them trademarked is because I'm going to use the funds to start an orphanage.
Oh my gosh, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Wow, that is something a little bit surprising and very wonderful to hear.
Well, thank you.
Peggy, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been absolutely fascinating. For those of you listening, think about your habits. Think about how you're sabotaging yourself. Think about what you can flip, and then go find Peggy's work online. Because I, even in reading for this interview, I learned a lot about myself.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street.
When you're ready to take your game to the next level,
join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge
on GoToLaunchStreet.com,
the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results.
GoToLaunchStreet.com.